If I could call the last session to order, please. So this is the last formal session of the forum, and it is a keynote lecture by His Excellency Sayakan Sisuvong, who is current Lao People's Democratic Republic ambassador to the United Kingdom. Before this appointment, he had been permanent secretary at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He had previously been Deputy Secretary General of the ASEAN Political and Security Community at the ASEAN Secretariat. And he had acquired an MSc in ASEAN Enlargement from the International Relations Department at ANU. Now, I mention all of this because I want to bring out what a complicated, convoluted, textured individual we get to have deliver this last lecture. Not only is he a scholar and an intellectual, he has been working at the coalface of ASEAN community building. Now, today, we have heard many different perspectives on ASEAN and on Southeast Asia. And many of us have been critical of ASEAN. Well, if not outright critical, at least not irrationally exuberant. But we do so from the outside, most of us, as academics, most of us, who have what IR scholars might call the luxury of distance. His Excellency works on both the outside and the inside, but distinctively, he has had to get down to the nuts and bolts of being a diplomat, working with difficult people like you and me, working directly on the coalface of building ASEAN. So if you could join me in welcoming him for this keynote lecture of the forum.
Is it good evening or late afternoon? Well, first of all, I'd like to inform you that before I came here, I was approached by Professor Danny Kwai whether I was interested to speak before this inaugural forum, Southeast Asia Forum. I said yes right away because actually, I feel ASEAN. I like to ASEAN to be more visible. I like to make more contribution to ASEAN, in or outside of our region. I know that ASEAN member states, ASEAN people, you students, will have to work harder to make sure that we are more visible in this country, in Europe. Before all, I just like to say a few words of thanks. First of all, dear Professor Danny, our fellow diplomats, our colleagues, and all professors and lecturers and all postgraduate or PhD students. I feel I'm not isolated, but I think I'm the only diplomat today to talk. That is why I like to make sure that I don't wear a diplomatic hat today. I like to share with you my views, how I see ASEAN, how Southeast Asia has evolved, and then we got the ASEAN organization, which many of us have already listened to, as Professor Danny said, from different perspective. I actually, working in ASEAN since 1992, I have seen achievement, progress. I have witnessed difficulties, challenges. That is why I am a diplomat who is quite or very optimistic about ASEAN future. That is why I'm talking today about a few, brighter future of ASEAN, rather than trying to share with you most challenging and tasks that we are having. I know that I have about 50 minutes. That is why I won't be able to touch upon too many issues. But I just like to say that we in Southeast Asia, most of us may be already aware that our region is not young anymore. As I share with you some friends here already, only 2 years ago, the scientists from America and from France and Australia have discovered the human skull, which dated back to 63,000 years old in the northern part of Laos. And before that, all scientists believed that the Japanese skull was the oldest, about 40,000 years old. So we are ancient. We have a civilization already. That is why in many cases, I myself, when talking about Southeast Asia, I never agree with the French when they call Indochina. I don't like Indochina as the French call it, because Indochina for France, it's only combined of Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. But for me, Indochina should be 10 ASEAN member states, because this region is where the two great civilizations met. There's Indian civilization and China. And I like to reverse the order of alphabet order, because rather than Indo-China, it should be China-Indo, because that's the alphabetical order in English. Why they call Indochina? that's the way I say it. And I just like to say that we in ASEAN now, or even before that, many of you might have have heard a lot. Our region, Southeast Asia, is one of the most interesting, I should say, is the most interesting region, if you like, in the whole world, because of many reasons, which I'm going to share with you later on. But first of all, this is the region where we have experienced conflicts, disputes, wars for centuries. And after that, during the colonial powers enter into Southeast Asia, all of ASEAN member states now were colonized by major powers from Europe, mainly, except Thailand. So you name Myanmar, Brunei, Singapore, Malaysia were under the British, and the Dutch with Indonesia. Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam were under the French. Thailand was able to manipulate its foreign policy to be able to preserve its independence. That is why I like to mention to you that we in ASEAN now, we more or less should understand our history, history of conflicts, history of dispute. And also, we know that during the Cold War, Southeast Asia has been one of the most fiercely fought by two major blocs. Soviet Union in the one side and America the other side. So we were dragged in to these two different opposing polars. Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam were under a protracted and destructive war. And many people say Vietnam War. Actually, I prefer to call Indochina War, because the war occurred in three countries. And only in 2010, that international community really recognized that the bombs that
bomb over the three countries. Laos was the only country that heavily bombed than any other, because during that time, Laos population, there were only 3 million people, and they dropped 3 million tons of bombs. So one person received 1 ton. And could you imagine today, about 1/3 of those bombs were not exploded. That is why in 2010, when UN proposed the international conference on UXO, Laos volunteered first to convene this international conference in Vientiane. I was attending on behalf of the ASEAN Secretariat. So this is what I just like to say, that during the Cold War, we had a lot of difficulties among countries, but we were born geographically together among the 10. Now we are 11, of course. Now I just like to go very quickly that Indochina, what impact it has over ASEAN and over all of us. Indochina war was very fiercely and fought, and many of you already know that there are at least 50,000 American lost over there, and many thousands of people disappear, and even the American planes, we call it MIA, are lost over there. In Laos alone, there are 570 cases of American plane lost over there, because I more or less know, because I was also director of American and Canada and DES and all division before that. But the war dragged on until 1975. Then there was a turning point. I use the term turning point because in the past, in our region, there was no two political systems. But only after 1975, then there were two political systems existed in Southeast Asia. Then when I did my thesis in Australia, I tried my best to find out what happened after that. We know that right after that, there have been a lot of movement among leaders of ASEAN, leaders, original member of ASEAN and CLV to visit each other, Pham Van Dong, Krian Sak Chamanan, and many others. And ASEAN member states themselves, original members, came up with the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation, and they signed, the leaders signed the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation on the 24th of February, 76. It means that it shows from in Article 2 of the TAC, the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation itself, it spelled out a number of principles, the fundamental principles of interstate relations that I don't have time to mention here. At least there are six fundamental principles: mutual respect of independence, sovereignty, equality. We got the right of every state to lead its national existence. This shows that the ASEAN original member state already recognized that there were socialist system over there. We recognize, we respect each other. For example, non-interference in the internal affairs of one another and settlement of differences and so on. So these are the turning point for Southeast Asia. And then after that, as I said, reciprocal visit took place, and until late 80s, when, of course, we know during that time, the American already withdrew from Southeast Asia, the importance of the two opposing camps was not there anymore. Now, it was the new need among countries in the region to approach, to get together, to find out what potentials we have. That is why there is one very important slogan launched by the Thai foreign prime minister and during his visit to Indochina, to Laos and Thai and Vietnam. It says that Chatchai Chunhawan then said that we have to turn from a battlefield into a marketplace. Because we know that there are potentials in untapped countries like Laos, Cambodia, and Myanmar, because they were less developed. There are resources, there are potentials over there. That is why the two opposing, they used to be opposing, they really approach each other to make sure that now we have to make sure that we have to chartered our own destiny. This is what is happening. Then in the on the 22nd of July 1992, I accompanied my foreign minister to Manila. We signed the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation on the 22nd of July. And I remember very well what he said. One phrase, very important phrase, let bygone be bygone. This is a famous phrase, a phrase of my foreign minister. And then on the same date, Vietnamese also were signed the same treaty. And 3 years later, Vietnam joined ASEAN in 1995. Laos was not ready yet because we, in terms of manpower, in many capacity building need to be done. That's why Laos joined ASEAN later on in 1997. And of course, later on, Cambodia. I'd just like to share with you briefly about why Cambodia could not join ASEAN on the same time, same date with ASEAN. Here, I'd just like to make sure that we understand. In Hanoi, I was there as well. Foreign ministers discussed about situation in Cambodia. And finally, they said no, could not, because there was political internal conflict over there. We have to postpone the admission of Cambodia. That is why Cambodia was postponed until 99. This is just a very short, the gist of what happening over there. That is why in ASEAN, in Southeast Asia, we together, we gradually make or build trust and confidence. I just like to say now, we have come to the point where 10 ASEAN member states were admitted to ASEAN. We have, I would like to use the word, we have come to understand that we cannot separate from ourselves. This is 10 countries in the same region geographically. We must share our destiny. We must struggle to build our prosperity, bring benefits to the people. I just like to share with you also, in the last 49 years, ASEAN has made significant achievement despite many difficulties. I don't have time to mention documents after documents we have signed. Some people may say that is paperwork, but actually that's secure that we have to build our institution by having legal document, the TAC, the Songfan and so on, the Solface, and they all strengthen our institution. Very quickly, I just like to also mention that ASEAN, making sure that we develop and we tap all the potential we have existing in the region. But at the same time, we know that we cannot live alone with our dialogue partners. We are outside powers. We have to make sure that we create a platform to enable dialogue partners to benefit from that. That is why ASEAN has been able to come up with initiative after initiative. There are many initiatives. I don't have time to really go through. But the thing is that ASEAN have been thinking, have gone through a lot of homework using think tank. Track two people have been working very hard to help officials. Singapore has been one of the forefront in this. When I was Deputy Secretary General of ASEAN, many foreign experts came to see me. They said that, sir, you know, 85% of initiative came from Singapore. I said, I was laughing. 85%, they said, came from Singapore. Okay, that's a contribution to all ASEAN, I told them. That is why I said that ASEAN has been very receptive to international cooperation, making sure that outward-looking policy is in place, making sure that we create platform for all. That is why when we are talking about regional architecture, we are talking about ASEAN Regional Forum. When we are talking about EAS, of course, when we discuss about ASEAN Regional Forum, which is the only security forum in the whole Asian Pacific, it was a very difficult time. I was there in Brunei when the paper was about to adopt. But we know that there were three stages: confidence building, preventive diplomacy, and then peaceful resolution, and so on. So this is how ASEAN has been trying to work. But later on, we know that there were more demands of cooperation, and we need to embrace more major power. That is why the EAS was formulated. EAS. It was very difficult time for all ASEAN member states to come up with this kind of formula, because we had among ASEAN member states, some like to embrace quickly America, for example. But some said that although Russia proposed to be there right away, but we cannot do that unless the American join, because we want to make sure that it's a kind of balance. So we have to accommodate each other. Finally, the American, the Russian were admitted. And there become the East Asia summit itself. Of course, it's the original goal was a bit different from now, because we aim to talk about more economic cooperation, more cultural environment. But now there has been a new tendency to focus a bit to security as well. Well, and I don't know how much time I have now. I just like to say that there have been initiatives from ASEAN, many initiatives. ASEAN have been working together so hard to make sure that we accommodate, we create platform, we create opportunities for our dialogue partners. But at the same time, there are initiatives from dialogue partners, which we have to work very carefully. There have been the Chinese, the Japanese, the Indian. I can give you some of the examples why ASEAN have been able to accommodate all of these. For example, in the Mekong River sub-region, originally there was only GMS, Greater Mekong sub-region. And then comes Japan Mekong. Then comes the Lower Mekong Initiative by the American. And I have been approached by some of our British friends whether we should have a British initiative or not. But so far, I have not heard from them. But I said it's a good idea to have to go there. There has been the Russian approach. There is also Mekong Ganga, because we accommodate all of them. As long as you feel that you benefit from our regional cooperation, we are happy in our region. And lately, the Chinese like to add one more sub-regional cooperation, that is Lanshan Mekong. ASEAN also accept that one. As long as we understand each other, ASEAN member state, accommodate each other. There is one thing that I'd like to share with all of you, is that ASEAN, also we work very hard, and we know what we are going to build in the future. We adopt our vision 2015, 2020, and we know what we need. But at the same time, we know that we are different from the European Union. Germany is the biggest economy, largest economy, and many other, just like Great Britain and France, Italy, they are more developed than other countries. But in ASEAN, Singapore is more developed, but Singapore is smaller economy. How can Singapore help the other ASEAN member states to develop? It's impossible. They can take part in some projects, of course. That is why I can give you one example of how ASEAN, with the understanding that as long as we identify our needs, please find yourself to get donors or cooperation with other dialogue partners. AMBDC, for example, ASEAN Mekong Development Corporation, which was launched during 1995. That is, it was launched there, and we were talking about ASEAN Singapore Kunming Railway since then. 1995 and now. Not many funds secure from ASEAN member state. Malaysia extended some technical assistance, some to Cambodia, but the railway system never built. There were missing links along the way from Thailand to Phnom Penh, for example, and others. Even the other spur line from Nong Khai to Laos and then to Kunming, and then another spur line through Myanmar. We know what we need, but where are to get the money from? That is why ASEAN have been able to understand each other. As long as you could bring investors, as long as you were making sure that this will complement to ASEAN overall effort, please do so. That some of I listened to Prime Minister Abhisit 2 weeks ago. Of course, he said that he was not informed about the connection between the railway here. Actually, we were very close. We shared information. Laos now start to build already the speed rail from Kunming to Laos. In 3 years, we're going to finalize that one. It's going to be one of the options for ASEAN to transport from Singapore through Cambodia and then through Vietnam, which is about maybe 1,500 kilometers longer than through Laos. Laos is the shortest. We just leave it to what companies they like to choose, because they are talking benefit, profit. So this is what I'm trying to you and share with all of you, that in ASEAN, we have been able to accommodate each other despite their differences. I just like to share one back-the-scene scenario how ASEAN member states managed to gradually adapt to a new habit of criticizing each other. In Singapore was the first case when the ASEAN ministers, foreign ministers retreat. Some original members of ASEAN, of course, tried to ask Myanmar about the development situation over there, development, political development in Myanmar. Myanmar was not ready then, because it was the first time. But then, years after years, we were gradually adopted to that. Member state get used to it. We asked Myanmar, could you brief us what is happening over there? But of course, it depends on what country. This is another example. In 2004, when Laos chaired ASEAN for the first time, some other member state of ASEAN already more or less informed Laos, the chair, that they like to take up the issue of southern of Laos, of Thailand. A Muslim situation where Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra said, if you take it up, I will walk out. I would walk out from the meeting room. So finally, Lau had to double check with all the leaders, head of state, the government, that it was not yet suitable, not right yet to talk about situation in the southern part of Thailand. So it depends on case by case basis. It doesn't mean that Myanmar was not ready, but it depends. Thailand also during that time was more democratic than Myanmar, but was not that ready to discuss about its internal situation. So, Mr. Chairman, I think I should leave it for now for you, but I just like to say a few words in saying that in 49 years of ASEAN existence, we have gone through a lot of difficulties. At the same time, we have made a lot of achievement. Achievement is even more even more so and faster now because we have created more opportunities. ASEAN Economic Community and ASEAN Community was there. That is why I think we have ASEAN member states have experienced how to navigate different kind of waters in the past. Now, with whatever situation in South China Sea and many others, and the One Belt, One Road, the TPP, I think ASEAN will all embrace. We like to take advantage of our strategic location. If China offers something that ASEAN, that America cannot offer, then we take from China. United States of government may propose something, but they never come back with the budget. So we have to approach other dialogue partners. Do you have money? Come. So this is what ASEAN is doing, because ASEAN itself, we like to build. We like to make sure that we develop. We catch up. We catch up with the rest. That is why ASEAN will be able to accommodate the other major powers in the future. And I'm very confident that with our geographical bond, with our shared destiny, ASEAN will be able to really bring a lot more benefits to its people and will bring a lot more benefits to our partners around the world. Thank you very much.
Okay, His Excellency has been kind enough to suggest that we might go through a little Q&A session at this point. The image that he's given us of the work that he personally and others have been involved in building the ASEAN community is, of course, a little bit different from how some of the other narrative has gone. So perhaps we could have a little bit of a discussion on how these different views stack up. Yes, I can't quite see you. James, I could begin with you, and then I'll come around to Titi Nan at the back. So we'll take a couple.
Yes. Thank you, Ambassador, particularly for the more uplifting concluding remarks on the ASEAN's role. Contrasting that of what we heard earlier this morning, particularly Ambassador Risaw Sukma, who talked about the challenge that ASEAN is confronting. I'm just sort of thinking that given how more optimistic you are and that Laos is going to be at the chair this year, how would you deal with this particular issue over China? I mean, the South China Sea obviously is the focal point. But I think more broadly speaking, the whole challenge of China rising in the region, and less than 1 month ago, I think the Chinese foreign minister had announced the consensus in Laos, and some critics feel that this is really an example of how divided ASEAN is. Your former colleague, Ambassador Ong Keng Yong, former Secretary General of ASEAN, I think he was making rather pointed remarks that China is dividing ASEAN. And Bilahari too, actually, both of them. So what do you think would happen at the summit, and how Laos would be able, I think, to bring about greater unity for ASEAN to move forward? Thank you.
Thank you, James. Would you like to take this?
Yes.
I'll come back to Titi Nan. You can speak from here. Microphone should work.
Oh, microphone is here, right. Okay. Thank you very much, James, for your question. Actually, due to time constraint, I have not gone through some of the points that I should have done. on this, of course, and as I said, and all of us may understand that each individual ASEAN member state has its own strength to contribute to ASEAN. Many people ask before Laos join ASEAN, what Laos gonna gonna give to ASEAN? What only you gonna receive from ASEAN? Actually, not. We have many things to offer: stability, political stability. We have natural resources, strategic location, and so on and so forth. And then one thing that I never share with you is that because I forgot to mention about it. Along the way that Laos joined ASEAN since 1997, Laos has been playing quiet diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Behind the scene, I can give you some of the examples. In 2004, in 2005, when Laos chaired ASEAN for the first time, I flew to North Korea with my foreign minister. And we talked to the leadership of North Korea. And then we came back. Mm-hmm. It's a bilateral visit, of course. But under that bilateral visit, we talk about ASEAN, ASEAN Regional Forum. When the AIF meeting was convened in Laos, we organized the first ever encounter between the two foreign ministers. Korean, North Korean, and South Korean met confidentially at my Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So it was a contribution, quite diplomacy. And many examples of Thailand and Myanmar approach Laos. Could you talk to Myanmar, please? Could you convey this message to Myanmar and vice versa? So this is how we have done. And I could give you another example. During the ASEAN 9, Asia-Europe Summit, it was so difficult to come up with a joint communique. But could you imagine Laos managed to get a gift, we said, a gift from Europe? Please, this is what we need. Don't try to ask for too much from ASEAN. This is what we need. This is for future cooperation. Finally, the Europeans agree with us.
Yeah.
So this is quite diplomacy. We have to approach them. There are many channels of diplomacy. We don't have to talk openly like this. We can grab their hands and go back to the lobby. Talk to them first. Those who are more difficult, we talk to them first. That's how we have been doing. I'm not saying that other ASEAN member countries or state don't have ability or diplomatic skill, but it depends on the situation, circumstances, and your nuance, how to make sure that they understand. The recent foreign ministers of China, Wang Yi, visited to Laos also. They asked us to have a joint statement. Laos said no, because we have different perspective, but we are looking forward to have a dialogue, peaceful means. We respect your reservation on article on the on clause. And we also encourage you to use any channels of dialogue, being bilateral, trilateral, or more, as long as you come up with dialogue to keep, to maintain peace, stability. So that that is why we you have to be good listeners also. Listen to them when they propose. Don't just feel too much confident when you talk with diplomats from other countries. The European, for example, they are very principled. When they come up with the agenda, human rights, then it's very difficult if we don't explain to them properly. We're going to lose the momentum. That is why in Laos, we'll do our utmost to make sure that we will have joint communique, we will have joint statement in the next few months. On the 6th to 8th of September, there will be summit, series of summit. Obama and many other leaders will come to Laos. I may go back also to help our colleagues over there. So this is, please feel confident that Laos will do our utmost to serve, to bring benefit to ASEAN.
Thank you. Thitin An, and then I'll come in front. Thitin An first.
Thank you. I want to touch on two issues and end with a question. So state-society relations, and then the other one is China, the China factor. Excellency, you gave a very good account, a good narrative of how the region has come a long way from conflict, different kinds of conflict, civil war, ideological confrontations, divided Southeast Asia until it was one Southeast Asia of 10 countries. When I heard the panel on the ASEAN horizons, it was really uplifting. I felt that, you know, this is optimistic, hopeful. I felt better. I hear you, your remarks are very uplifting, but I don't feel the lift as much. In Laos this year, as you know, there are some concerns about civil society well-being. The case of the Sombat has not gone away. The ASEAN People's Forum this year has to be moved. It cannot be held in Laos, so it's going to be held in Timor-Leste. So this is not unique to Laos. I mean, I think state-society relations in Thailand also very contentious. In Vietnam, we've seen the same. So, you know, how is Laos going to deal with this going forward? And the other issue is the China factor. You mentioned that, you know, in Southeast Asia, whoever wants to come, whoever can provide the funding, the financing, ASEAN will go to. But in fact, China has provided a lot of financing to the point that there are concerns that Laos could become more beholden, maybe even to a point of being a client, in a client relationship with China. Same with Cambodia, to an extent with Thailand. So I think that we cannot really underestimate the Chinese patronage and growing influence in that way. So overall, you know, as a chair, I know that Laos is not going to repeat the mistake of 2012 with Cambodia and the lack of a joint communique, but how is Laos going to maintain its standing as a landlocked country, not sold out to China, and at the same time maintaining, managing state-society relations in the medium and longer term?
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Khun and Jan Thitinan, on your two points. I just like to say that the situation in each year is different. We listen to members. As I said, we are good listeners. We sound out first. What decision we should make. For example, on the civil society, as you said, because we want to make sure that there is a mutual understanding among the majority of member state and others. I understand that this has become, it always one of the very complicated issues. Just like during the championship of Thailand also. There has been kind of nearly diplomatic incidents which some leaders don't like, because it so happened that when civil society entered into the room and then straightforward criticized the leaders. Mm. So that's not the process, because we have our process. We listen to all, as I said, many initiatives launched by ASEAN come from track two. We cannot really isolate ourselves from track two. We listen to, but we have to use the right channel, right time. We listen to all. That's one point. The other point is about a citizen of Laos named Sombat Somphat. This is something that we try to explain to our friends around the world. We understand that he disappeared, but the police, the security, initially have made the greatest effort, but they could not find him. Mm-hmm. That is why there has been many questions raised by the society, the whole country. During the war, thousands of people disappear. You could not identify them. That where they are, many people don't have they are empty, many and unexplored ordinance. Are you going to pay attention to only one person? The parliament start to raise question. That is why after months of searching, then the police say that we are going to treat the issue equally to all the citizens of Laos. We cannot extend special treatment to one person only. That is how what we are doing our utmost to find anyway. I just like to talk about Chinese factor. This is very important because many people, when I was Deputy Secretary General and when I was a permanent secretary, people asked me a lot about this, whether Laos, even in my thesis, I really try to explain them because especially in the case of Laos, we share 400 kilometers common border with China. And of course, we like to make sure that as I share my views to with Professor Danny already, I said that investment promotion in Laos, we extended to all. We opened our door to all, to Japanese, Korean, European, to British, French, Italian, Russian. Those who we have project identified already. We explain, we invite investors to come over to look. This is mega project we like to carry out. Please encourage your investors to come. They come very slow. But we want to develop our country. But the one principle is that we must make sure that there is a quality investment from China, from Korea, from Australia. That is why when we are talking about mining in Laos, we choose Australian because they have more experience, more expertise, more technology. Mm. And then when the Chinese company came, if they can adhere to the principle, the criteria of environmental protection, then we go ahead with the Chinese as well. So all of these are it's equal treatment. We extend the same. We don't feel threatened by the Chinese and present in Laos because we feel that we really benefit from that. We benefit also. We bring benefit to the rest of ASEAN member states.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to have to call this session to a halt, I'm afraid. I apologize to those of you who are not able to get your questions in on time. I need to just say a few words as we close out the session, and then we have to run the... And then we get drinks outside, so... Your Excellency, distinguished guests.
They can ask me later.
Yeah, outside. You will be around still, and I know that Jürgen and Alice Na already have questions that they wish for you. The first thing I want to say, you know, we're coming to the end, obviously, of this inaugural Southeast Asia Forum. And the general feeling has been from everyone that we would like this to be an inaugural forum properly, not just the only Southeast Asia forum that the Southeast Asia Center will organize. We'd like to make this an annual event. So please set your Google calendars and your inboxes for another similar gathering around this time next year. Now, we will be able to do this only if we get the funding and the goodwill and the resources to be able to engineer such a thing. So here I'm looking at our friends at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office for any help you can give us, whether it's logistic, financial, or otherwise, or even just talking to other friends around who, as Bill Hayton says, we need this kind of an engagement here in London. It will be dour. It'll be a bad outcome if we lose this. This forum has involved academics, policymakers, diplomats, corporates, and students. And one of the distinguishing characteristics of both this forum and the Southeast Asia Center is how much student engagement has been part of our profile. We have, you know, students have appeared on the panel, there have been rapporteurs. And my personal view is that it is right and appropriate that we get all of this student engagement that we can. I go to, I attend, I listen to, I speak at ASEAN meetings, conferences, practically every other week. it's only students who come up to me at the end of this and ask, how can we young people help the ASEAN project? Everybody else, what can I do to make money out of this thing that you are trying to build? It's the students who are optimistic and strongly pan-ASEAN. You want to build an ASEAN community, it is in the students that we will get that. The rest of us are old and seasoned, and perhaps we are a little bit too jaded. It is the students and the young generation who found how information technology has killed physical geography. And this removal of geography across the vast distances that characterize ASEAN will be hugely important, not just for trade and integration and connectivity, all elements of economics and commerce, but also socially across large swaths of our ASEAN population. You want an ASEAN identity here. Let's build that through internet connectivity. It is the students that provide me full of hope for the future on ASEAN. Now, I say this because this is quite a change from the rather dour, depressing view of great power competition, fragile balance, and China intrusiveness in the affairs of ASEAN. Now, I have wonderful friends in the international relations community generally, and great friends in the international relations department here at LSE, but it seems to me I have to have a word with them about how their training depresses our students and makes them think that being depressed is normal, provided only that you call it realism. China, the United States, our China-US geopolitical competition in ASEAN, it is a reality. But I would be concerned if we tell only one side of this story. TPP, the US side of the story, has been viewed as a way to bring ASEAN together. True, only four countries in ASEAN for now are signatories to this. The largest economy in ASEAN is not yet up on it, Indonesia. But many view the development of TPP as a good thing. It counterbalances China, and it will bring economic prosperity to ASEAN. As an economist, I'm not as convinced that TPP is a good thing. Put to one side whether it might pass or not. Frankly, I don't think it will. But TPP is not just a trade agreement driven by the United States that will open up markets for ASEAN. Under the guise of labor standards elevation, intellectual property protection, and environmental protection, TPP also degrades the competitiveness of poorer developing countries across ASEAN in ways that other trade agreements took care not to do. ISDS, the Investor-State Dispute Settlement Mechanism, reduces the power of domestic governments in favor of multinational corporations. Now, all these are, of course, evil, but they're not as visible, not as manifest as China's construction around low tide elevations in the South China Sea, or indeed, as Titi Nan showed us in his vivid map, damming up the Mekong Basin. But in economic terms, what the United States is doing in ASEAN is potentially as damaging as the other side of great power politics, China, is in ASEAN. In contrast to this, China promises One Belt, One Road AIIB financing. It won't plug the gap entirely that His Excellency described, but you know what? Every little helps. This kind of an initiative is a big push to get private enterprise on board. It cannot escape significance that China chose to announce the Maritime Silk Road component of One Belt, One Road in Jakarta in 2013. And it cannot escape our notice that the first port of call for the one Maritime Silk Road component of One Belt, One Road is ASEAN. If One Belt, One Road and AIIB about infrastructure and connectivity, that's where we need to turn. Now, none of this is to excuse the terrible things that are going on in the South China Sea. Bill Hayton is absolutely right. If we could roll that back, we'd have a much clearer narrative. But what I'm suggesting in this closing remarks is that we want to have a balanced, nuanced view of what's happening in ASEAN. And the geopolitical narrative is not an obvious one. All of this is just to say, if we could do something like this again for next year and explore these issues and others that I'm sure will come up, that would be awesome. Now, I want to close by thanking the other people who have actually done almost all of the work, not me, in putting this forum together. First of all, there are our faculty associates, Jürgen Haack, Christian Schultz, and Catherine Ollerton, who have put together a wonderful intellectual program. Okay. Our students who have been involved both in helping the organization as well as being so enthusiastic about coming forwards on the infographics competition. The very last thing I want to say is to mention the wonderful staff that I have working around me. First of all of you have already dealt with Jenny, who I know first started out backpacking across Nepal and other parts of the region, but then returned to help out in post-disaster response work. Earthquakes, hurricanes, human evil. She has worked in Nepal, the Philippines, and Senegal. And along the way, also acquired an MSc in International Development and Humanitarian Emergencies in the International Development Department here at LSE. Second name I want to mention, Lei. Who was born in Vietnam, but lived in Hungary, Finland, and the UK. She speaks about 230 different languages. She has a BSc in International Relations from LSE. She had previously done translation and writing work for, among other things, Japanese educational NGOs, Vietnamese folk music, and the Finnish Museum of Contemporary Art. It is an amazing portfolio, and we will see much more of Lei. Final word, I cannot thank enough Zoe Kustampardi, who is sitting in the back. She's the center manager for the Southeast Asia Center, but that description does not appropriately give her credit. She is the one who makes everything happen at the center. From 18 months ago, when she penciled out our first content sequence for the website, which didn't even exist with a URL, through now pushing through initiatives on research funding. If there were times in the last 18 months when I looked at what Southeast Asia Center had to do and I knew it couldn't be done, it was Zoe who convinced me otherwise. Thank you all very much. Now, we've reached the end of the forum, so I would like to invite everyone to drinks just outside. Thank you.